Light is also symbolic in a way that it directs us in a particular way. So in theater, for example, the lobby lights blink. We know what to do. Get ready to go in and see the show. The auditorium lights fade out. Oh my gosh, let's sit up and pay attention. Let's look at the main curtain. Boom, the curtain opens. The light comes up and it's like, I'm in a ballroom. I'm in a crazy place. I'm in something, you know, Brechtian. I'm in Swan Lake. And the light really takes us there.
Hi, Smart Community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a wonderful conversation with Lenny Schwendinger. Lenny is a published award-winning authority on the many issues of city lighting with more than 20 years of experience creating worldwide illuminated environments. In this episode, Lenny begins by telling us about her background in arts and community activism, her passion for weaving those two things together, and what sparked her interest in the smart community space. Lenny then shares with us what a smart community means to her and takes us through her journey that led her to the work that she is doing now, before she shares with us some of her observations and learnings of the city lighting space and some of the differences she has seen across cultures and different job types. Lenny then discusses the role city lighting plays in safety, in particular for more vulnerable groups of society, and shares with us some of the projects she's been working on recently. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trend of community engagement and the value it can bring to smart communities. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Lenny. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. And you?
I am also fabulous, and I am very excited to have you on the podcast. So let's just jump straight in. Can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Sure. I've had a kind of two streams in my background. One is arts and theater arts, being a theater lighting designer, for example. And the other actually is community activism. So those two streams have been parallel ever since, and that's been a long time. So the passion part became how to weave those two things together, how to weave together drama, expression, relationships through theater. Relationships are so interdisciplinary and really collaborative, and then that sort of street savvy and community building and how to put that together. And so that brought me to now, really.
Yeah, awesome. Well, let's just go to, you know, obviously we're on the Smart Community Podcast. I'm really keen to hear more about your kind of unique space or unique area in this space. So tell us what sparked your interest in the smart community space.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a little bit of a geek anyway. You know, I was a rock and roll roadie and did all kinds of electrical things and, you know, was a techie person. In the first place, along with the sort of community activism and the art. So when smart technologies came around, I had already been envisioning a way to transfer the kinds of light scenarios that we make in a theater into the street space. So I had dreamed, and with my class at Parsons Architectural Division, had already dreamed of creating light scenarios on the streets in public space, but we couldn't dim the lights at that time. Oh, so long ago. You couldn't dim public lights. So then when smart technologies came along and LED, those two together, I just thought, oh my God, here it is. We can fade and dissolve and change colors and have long life lamp sources that are easier to maintain and last a long time. And that's what got me excited.
Well, let's go to what is a smart community to you.
So For me, smart community is that sustainable community. Smart community is a district, a community, a city that can use technologies to enrich people's lives, to build capacity, which means learning and finding new professions and engaging in government and public activities. So smart communities to me really is not about data. I thought I would drop that one in. It's really much more about the person on the street and how we can learn together and build together.
You've got such an interesting background, you know, reading all the things that you've done and what you've been doing. Can you take us on a little bit of a journey of how you came to be where you are now and let us know where that is? And then, yeah, how you actually got there?
Yeah, I wanted to say that sort of in my other hat, I like bridges and landscapes and parks and waterfronts. So that's like, there's that design side and creating public spaces, and especially at night. But the trajectory to more of the community-minded dreams of and advocacy for smart lighting and smart cities really starts with my night seeing program, which is walking with people at night all around the world. I've been doing that for, I guess it's now 12 years. And the reason that I walk with people at night is to raise awareness of light, which is really this dreamy sort of poetic, you know, thing, or this really horrible, shadowy pockets of danger. You know, those are the polar opposites. But to raise awareness of what do I feel, meaning the person on the tour at night, and how can I express light? It's so difficult to photograph, to draw, to make plain, that I thought if we could elevate the language, and that is emerging of the technologies, the emotions, the colors, the way of placemaking at night, if we can elevate the language, that we would be way far ahead. So I invented this walking tour to help communities basically understand the night and the lighting so they could then make, let's say, demands or assert themselves or advocate for better nights. And so the smart part comes through the control. Actually, it's the lighting control. And also we can merge things like displays of data, let's say, or displays of information through light. So there's a lot of tentacles that sort of come together with light and smart cities.
Yeah, and you said you've done this all over the world. At the moment, you're in New York City, is that right? And you spent a bit of time in London, and you've been to Australia a few times as well. What are some of the things you've seen that are keen to hear, the things that are the same across the world that people are, you know, thinking or talking about in this light space? And what are some of the differences you're seeing? I guess particularly, you know, is there a more European flavor that people are expressing, or, you know, when we go to the US or Australia, is it something completely different?
That is an excellent question, because whereas there may be some universals, I think what we've all been learning is that specificity, granularity, input, let's use the word community again, it's like so tired and overused, but let's say neighbors, cultures, come together in different ways. So for example, I'm going to give you a couple of cultural examples. So I worked in the Netherlands once, and at 6 o'clock, there's dinner. Well, they made an appointment with me at a bistro at 7. And so I was about to order food, and they said, well, nope, we eat at 6. And I was like, well, God darn it. I was so flummoxed, you know, okay, you always eat at 6 and you invite your guests out at 7. I got it. And then, you know, my friends from India who are like, we have dinner at 11 at night. And then we go out to the night market. Okay. And then you go to Bogota, and it's like, oh, 2 a.m. We go dancing in the streets. So, you know, there are a lot of differences in activities, and then light kind of follows that. Now, so I want to say that being aware lack of electricity, lack of wherewithal, lack of organizational skills and support, which smart city devices and networking really help smooth that. I mean, if people are trained and if you have the staff, I mean, you can't just boom, it's all networked and it all works. So we know that doesn't hold. That's not true. What's true is that different communities and cultures have different starting places. So again, Bogota, because I've worked there quite a bit, you know, one of my friends sent me a photo of a tall light pole in the sort of barren grassy area. And she said, look, light, it's a light pole in the park. And I'm going, oh my God, that is the worst thing, the worst example I've ever seen. And my friend who knows better, or I thought, is so happy. She says, well, you can see. So, you know, the levels of what do they call emerging economies, et cetera, you know, are so important. And we can't really foist what we think it must be so, what we think is the right way to go. Of course, if you live in the US and in a place like New York or London, you know, you've had a chance to refine your thought processes and also try an awful lot out. You know, engage in pilots, try stuff. But in other economies, it's like, let's just get some electricity and a few lights out there. So I just wanted to say that actually the social research has to be done to get on the right wavelength to then start lighting.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And like you said, it's really starting where people are and then lifting. It's not, okay, oh, we have to get here. So we'll have to push and accelerate even further, because otherwise we can't call it smart if it's not, you know, this level or whatever. And I think that's really, really important. And even when you, yeah, like maybe some people don't think about lighting and community in the same sentence, but like reading some stuff and that you've sent me and looking through that and, you know, following you on LinkedIn and having this conversation now, it's just, and one of the things which is obvious is 50% of our time is spent at night, right? But often we're always thinking about the daytime. And although we do very much notice if the lights go out, right? If we're even, you know, if we're at home. But then thinking about how do we use light to make these places that we want to be 24 hours of the day, maybe not 24 hours, maybe we need to sleep as well. But some people might, you know, you rotate on, someone's there during the day, but then also it's this great place. Like, it's just utilizing this space that we have in the best possible way. And also, like you said, different cultures spend different hours in different ways. And I definitely experienced that when I was in Saudi Arabia. I was like, you know, I wanted to go out in the morning and they're like, no, like everyone's just, it's nighttime, right? Like the markets don't open till the afternoon. And then you go out and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. Forgot kind of thing that it's so different. And even in when I lived in South Korea, yes, very much a night kind of space. And then we start later the next day. So
no, that's really good points. I'd like to bring up here that also, who is our, as they say, user, which I hate, you know, who is our audience? Who are the people that are going to be involved in this light environment? And the truth is that in our societies, we have night workers, we have night shift, we have third shift, we have second shift all through the night. And really, one of my focuses right now is what can we do in public space to make the essential workers or key workers' life better? You know, why does it have to be this horrible grinding life? Some people really focus on how exhausting it is, and you're switching your circadian rhythms. And other people are, I actually had a phone call yesterday with a tech for my phone. And she said, I much prefer the evening shift. I got in a whole huge conversation with her and she would never have the day shift. She loves the evening shift. So I really think that those of us who are designing the smart night, let's say, I've never said that before, are looking at who is the audience, in a sense, who is using the night, who's living in the night. Is the night clubber who's having a great time and wants to go out? Or is it night shifter who's actually an immigrant who has no choice in the type of work, you know, cleaners and security guards and medical staff. It really, you know, it's time to pay attention around the clock.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I do like the term smart night, whatever we make it mean. But then also, like, got, you know, people working through that. It's not like life doesn't stop, like, as soon as the lights go off kind of thing. But then also thinking more and more about how, yeah, different people use space and that type of thing, and how we're thinking about these, you know, 24/7 economies and all that type of stuff. It all kind of feeds into that. And I'm wondering if you've done a bit of work on this space, in this space as well, on safety, right? There's lots of talk about women and safety and all those type of things. What kind of role does light play? I mean, that's a fairly obvious question, but I feel like you would have some deeper insights into that conversation around light and safety, particularly for more vulnerable groups.
Well, it actually isn't obvious. The only part that's obvious is about vehicle clashes with people. So, you know, you step off the curb and it's night and there's no lighting in the zebra crossing. That's a problem. Now, you might have gotten hit anyway because the driver's drunk, but that kind of safety lighting in terms of visual acuity is very important. And that's pretty clear. But, you know, you'd be really surprised. And I always have to be careful. Like, what is the perception of safety, which might also lead to more people gathering? And that's the eyes on the street. And what do they call it? Natural surveillance is an actual term, you know, where you feel safer amongst people. So it's a bit of a circle. I feel safer. I know the boundaries from light. I can see the buildings. I can see other people. I feel safer, let's say. And then there is, you know, does lighting attenuate or reduce crime? The jury is completely out. And I can quote a couple of studies. Don Slater of LSE, Configuring Light, has done a couple of studies where, for example, one area in actually outer London where more light, you know, is a great thing. And the other area where more light is do not reveal me. Do not point me out. You know, darker is better. And then Arup in Melbourne has done some really great studies lately on women and safety and kind of just parsing out, teasing out responses. But then remember, that's the perception of safety. I feel safer, therefore I will march into that park, you know, late at night. So it's a very nuanced area, although people would like to think it's as simple as turn on more lights and you'll be safer. It's not really.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think there's, you know, I work a lot in the transport space as well. And so there's that perception of safety of using public transport at night as well, and what kind of role that light plays into that. But also, like you said, it's not just, okay, well, if there's a lamp pole, I'm going to stand at that bus stop at midnight. There's so many things around, yeah, like you said, natural surveillance, eyes on the street, but also what else is happening around? Is it barren or, you know, whatever, or there's activity? But then also, am I confident that the bus is actually going to come? Because if it doesn't, then I'm going to stand here for an hour, and I don't mind standing here for 5 minutes, but if the bus doesn't come, those type of things. So all of that plays in. And then on the other end, okay, well, when I get off the bus, what's that last mile or last kilometer look like to get to my house? Is someone going to meet me? All those type of things really feed into, yeah, that whole experience of that journey end to end, thinking about transport. But then, yeah, if you're thinking about like going to a place at night, and all of those things feed into it.
Well, I'd like to say that, you know, we're working on first mile, last mile issues and design, and just kind of going, now, is there a way to think about illumination in terms of anything after dark, whether it's super early in the morning because you just got off your shift, or you have to start a shift and it's still dark and it's winter, for example, or when you leave a workplace, or even if you're working from home and you have to go somewhere after dark and then come back after dark? Are there some ways of marking the major routes, or maybe just, I'm calling them nighttime desire lines, which we use in landscape? A desire line in a park is not a path. It's one that people keep making over and over. So what is the night desire line from A to B, from bus to home in general? I mean, the jury's out, we don't know yet, but I'm really concerned about creating safer routes for the first and last mile with light. And, but you're so right. It's the context, really. It's the infill, as we say, right? That is moving from thing to thing or moving from place to place and how that feels safe and how we've designed that.
Mm. And also who, like, you might feel safe doing it with that journey when you've got a friend with you or someone else, you know, with you or whatever, but maybe by yourself, you might choose a different option, which will be, yeah, again, something to explore because, yeah, there's so many different variables that feed into that, right?
I just don't think we have explored it, you know, in this transportation mode. We're all learning it's so important how people get around and movement in cities. We haven't even, do you know what I'm saying? It's just like, what is that world? Where are people going, you know, aside from their cars? Some people like myself, I don't have a car, you know, and I hate cars. So it's kind of like, how do you reevaluate that movement? And how would smart approaches, let's say, fit in?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm keen to talk about some of the other projects and things you've been working on. So tell us about some of your favorite projects you're either working on now or you finished or you're looking forward to.
Well, I have to say one of my projects, and I'm going to put in air quotes, is to create a pilot demonstration of community building through smart lighting. Okay, it hasn't happened yet. It must happen. And that's from the working committee, let's say, in a neighborhood that is transforming their night, transforming their district, bringing together a working party to do the social research with professionals, paid, and following through the pilot to create different scenarios after dark. So, you know, the really obvious one is, okay, an entertainment district is colorful. But there's some that are different than that. There's some that are pathways, Australia laneways. You know, how I get from place to place. Let's focus on a first and last mile experience. What would that light be like? Would it change at the wee hours? Would it get brighter so it's a little less scary? Would it get darker because there are fewer people? These are counterintuitive issues to think about. Would it get colorful at midnight to remind people it is midnight, is a visual chime? You know, how can we create these kind of theatrical, beautiful, interesting, inspiring light scenarios that are meaningful to different communities in the way that I just said? Maybe a light chime at midnight might be useful. Maybe a light chime every half hour would be useful. We would create these scenarios together with communities and evaluate them together. And then the great thing about smart lighting is you can tweak them and change them because after all, it's just software and it's flexible.
Yeah, I think that's also really important. You can actually test and try things because, you know, once you've got the hardware in place, then, yeah, like you said, you can just tweak the software and shift and move things around. And yeah, I also think you, with the data, then you can work out, well, actually, when it's red, people don't want to be there or whatever. I don't know, whatever color. Can you hear about colors? If there's any universal colors of calmness or anything like that that you would use or... Yeah, I guess like, and or would that be different depending on, you know, who's there and what kind of activities are happening and that type of thing?
Every single one of those points that you raise are cultural.
Mm.
You know, I mean, honestly, you lived in Asia and I don't know, I lived in Japan. I mean, I just found that many people were attracted to very cool, crisp light. And here in New York, everyone's absolutely sure it has to be warm light. I prefer warm light. Colors, I mean, the quintessential one, the white in some societies means death. In other societies, it means purity. You know, is red blood or is it love? So I think that with this very site-specific research with your community, what can we call them, alongside the community, one wants to learn. One wants to learn what is resonant here.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And yeah, even just, you know, talking about color, can kind of visualize it, and you can see like the red could be blood or the, you know, light red love heart or whatever. And I'm just remembering now that you're talking about this, that I went to when I was in Korea, along the canal that they have through the city, they had this light show on the canal. It's just beautiful. And yeah, these beautiful big red hearts that were just lit up, and then all these different things. And again, just really, really powerful, but quite, I guess, a simple kind of display. But being able to change the lights and everything just really made everything come to life. And yeah, again, I could just kind of see it in my head as you were talking about red, and that beautiful red heart that's, you know, had I Love Soul on it or something like that. And again, it's something to draw people there. And then, of course, you can have the markets or the this or the that, and really stimulate the economy in that area, or in that space, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
There's so many things that feed into it, right?
Well, and you know, I should, I mean, there's so many aspects. I mean, that's sort of the art / entertainment spectacle side. There's so many good light artists now. I mean, when I started, you know, it was like, oh my God, there's two of us. And now there are all these amazing, really good light artists. And so the interactivity, you could call that smart, right? Because that's the software and the triggers and the delays and the dimming that once were the domain of theater, I'm telling you. And now that interactivity with people, participation, changeability, transformation with light, you know, I would love to see that as a normal part, just think, of the smart city.
Yeah. And I think thinking about it like as, you know, it used to be in the theater, but now we're bringing it into that public realm is really, yeah, it really helps you kind of imagine what it could be like, I think, because there's a lot of things, you know, that we, it was just a novelty before, but then it's like, oh, actually, no, this is a thing that we do now. We can really enrich, you know, the places where we, where we work, live and play, essentially, and then create new spaces for people as well. So yeah, I really like, because yeah, I'm just thinking now about like stage shows, like going to see, you know, The Lion King or something, and just the amount of light, you know, that you don't even, I don't know, it's not something you, I was even like thinking about, do you know what I mean? Was, yeah, it's really interesting, fascinating to think, bring that into the public realm. And then even you think about, you know, you go to Singapore or you go to Hong Kong rather. I think Singapore has something similar as well. But, you know, it's like, oh, let's go see the light show. And yeah, it's just beautiful. And yeah,
I mean, there are better ones. There are better ones and not so good ones, right? But that's all about design. And I think we're building a discipline in that way. I wanted to mention just for the listeners that light is also symbolic in a way that it directs us in a particular way. So in theater, for example, the lobby lights blink. We know what to do. Get ready to go in and see the show. The auditorium lights fade out. Oh my gosh, let's sit up and pay attention. Let's look at the main curtain. Boom, the curtain opens. The light comes up and it's like, I'm in a ballroom, I'm in a crazy place, I'm in something, you know, Brechtian, I'm in Swan Lake. And the light really takes us there.
Yeah, you're so right. And yeah, the fact that it directs us. And I think thinking about it more like that now, okay, well, in public space, what is it that we want people to be doing, thinking, being, feeling, all those type of things, and bringing that in when we're actually designing these places. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So my desire, you know, my wish really for our smart cities and communities of listeners is to, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm probably usurping one of your questions, but, you know, people are so data driven, you know, we're so concerned about the data, about the metrics and all of that. And it's a wonderful thing. We know how to do that and we can actually gather that. But, you know, please come and bring your artists, bring your designers on board as a key, important role. Because honestly, you know, the crummier light shows may not have been done by an artist. They may have been done by, you know, not really an artist, just someone who had all those hearts and it was in the storeroom and let's bring it on out. You know, it's not about the stuff we own and putting them in place. It's about the sort of more nuanced use of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the smart community space, and why I use the term smart community, is because I think smart city was too hard and, I don't know, just abrasive or something. And people in the community couldn't connect with it. Whereas when you say smart community, some people kind of, oh, smart, what's that? You know, don't really get that or whatever. But then they go, oh, well, community, I know what that is, right? And the creativity piece really needs to be integrated in, because we know that's where things, when you go to a place, there's bits and pieces, but you're right, it's the nuance, right? And the way it's been placed and all those type of things, the way it interacts with each other, the colors, the lighting, all the things that are used. And that's a creative, again, that's the artist. And the more I talk to artists on the podcast as well, I just love the different perspectives that they bring as well, because you need that, I guess. It's a different part of your brain that you use or something. There's something unlocked there, right? That's it's like the art of possibility. Yes, what could we do that's different? And I love that. And I think when we'll know that we've truly created these smart communities, when we're having festivals or art shows about smart communities and sharing and bringing those people along and designing it with people as well, and really being, that's part of the community. The smart community is part of the actual community, and it's not a concept that you have to explain. It's just there and embedded. Yeah.
Yeah. Co-design. I wanted to also say that I have that same experience about smart city versus smart community. We have a research group that's global called International Nighttime Design Initiative, and we put together smart lighting guidelines for New York State. And they were quite adamant. This is more the small towns and rural and sort of upstate, not New York City. And they were quite adamant about using the term smart communities. And I had not heard it before, but we were definitely read the Riot Act that was the term we're going to be using. And we kind of interchanged it for different points, but I think it's good. Do you feel, Zoe, that it's being adopted?
Yeah. I mean, I when I first started this podcast, it was the Smart City Podcast, and that was the term that was being used. And the first time I learned about smart cities was when I was in Korea, and it's definitely a term that's still used. But I think people are shifting more to that community space because they're realizing that it's not just about getting a big platform and, I don't know, people are thinking like the Jetsons or whatever, we're just making everything fly around in this big control command center. They're going, oh, actually, it's about what can we do to make things better for our community. Technology might be part of that. Data might be part of that. But actually, it's about looking at the pain points of the community and solving those. And I do often get oh, but what about the smart bench and the smart whatever, this, that, and the other? It's well, do we actually need that? Is that solving a problem for our community now or in the future? Or is it, maybe we want to test and try some things out? But I'm finding people using it more and more. And in the work that I do, I often that's the term I use. But I do realize that people know what smart city is as well. So I don't not use it. Yeah,
yes, that's the problem. Parlance, you want to be understood even if you don't like the term. I don't really like the term smart lighting, actually. Yeah. I like intelligent lighting or connected lighting. There's a lot of other terms. But, it's just you have to pick your battles.
Exactly.
Expression even.
Totally. And at the end of the day, as long as we're getting to that right outcome for the community, then whatever term, whatever flag we want to fly, whatever, we'll do it. But yeah, I did find that smart city was just very, particularly when I was talking to people in the community that weren't in the space, and they just couldn't even engage with the term. And I was this is wrong. We're talking about people. So that's when I shifted my language and the name of the podcast and everything, which people are oh my God, why would you do that? Smart city, your SEO will die or whatever. And I'm whatever.
Oh my God, do it for the SEO, if anything.
But yeah, so no, I found it. And yes, when I'm working with councils, I really try and get them to use that term as well, because then you also get a lot of the departments, because it can't just be, oh, this is a smart city team over here and they just work in isolation. It just can't be like that. So when you say community, people are like, oh, well, we're all doing this for the community. Okay, cool. I can get on board with this. What tech and data and new ways of thinking actually is the way that I put it. It's a more of a mindset thing. How can we actually embed that across? And so, even with smart lighting, for example, it's like that actually doesn't just affect one area. It's not just the lighting department, right? It's like community. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's where we can just have better conversations.
Well, the interdisciplinary in terms of designer, engineer, you know, architect, for example. And then I think the interagency, which is more Department of Transportation, yeah, IT, et cetera, and then some social thing, hopefully. It is a net. It is a network, you know. We're creating these meshes, we're creating these networks, and we actually have to do that with people, I think, to make it work.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think just to, if I wanted to go to the future in a sec, but to finish on that kind of thought, talking about obviously we're doing this with people in the community, but just say within a local government, they're at the coalface with the community. So that when we talk about smart cities and smart community stuff and smart lighting, we actually think we have to think about those people making decisions as people as well. And we have to help them then shift their mindsets too. And so that's kind of where we can use that term smart community. And also in the things that we've been speaking about, you know, on this podcast as well, getting people to actually remember that we're humans again, and that's why we're doing, you know. And so it's like the humans with that are doing the work and helping, but then also the outcomes for the community. There's like this, yeah, it's more nuanced again than just like, oh, we make a decision to build the framework and then we implement the smart whatever. It's like, no, actually it's a different way of thinking. And yeah, things are continuing to shift and change, which I think is good. But with time, with change, it's always heartache and pain and challenges, but also opportunities, which I think, which is why I love this space and why I jumped into this space, because I'm just like, there's so much potential.
Definitely.
Let's zoom to the future now. And yeah, tell us about some of the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough.
I mean, we've talked about so many of them.
I know, I was going to say.
Pick one out. We pretty much covered the map. But, you know, I do find that the emphasis on community engagement, community involvement, community participation is underscored. It's emphasized in almost everything I read. And I have to say that teasing that out with people who are more experienced than you and I, even though we might be experienced, who have been doing community outreach, who have been doing community participation on the ground with people, with groups, hand to hand, person to person, you know, incorporating those quote unquote experts, you know, the social workers, the nursery school teachers, the, you know, professional design outreach people who work with us on big infrastructural projects, let's say, because there is a value of bringing community in, of getting their buy-in, of getting their approval, that I have to say right now, it's not about polls and surveys. If you, the listener, think that we are talking about community engagement and participation by filling something out, whether it's online or on a piece of paper, that's not it. I think I'd like to say that we are talking about real co-design, collaboration, listening, acting upon, teaching each other. It's a two-way street, I always like to say. You know, it's not like, okay, now the man on the street, woman on the street, kid on the street is designing everything. No. It's let's bring in that input in a strong way, in a real way, authentic way, to drive and enrich the outcomes.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, again, it goes back to that interdisciplinary approach where we have so many people with so many different skill sets, but all are required to be in this space. But then that real kind of engagement, I think one of the biggest things in the smart community space, when you actually really embed it, there's a radical level of engagement that is required to do it properly or to do it successfully and continued. Again, it's a mindset shift. And like you said, it's not necessarily that we go, oh, hey, person on the street, do you think we need a pool right here or something like that? And they say yes, and then you do it. No, this integrated approach of how all those things connect together and how the community is going to work and what types of things are available and all those type of things and resources available. I think people are, and we're beginning to realize that more and more, I think, once we actually work in that co-design space. But then I totally agree as well. It's a different skill set. You need to bring it in and continue to go back and forth as well. So I think, again, it's one of those mindset shifts, like we said, and it will continue to evolve as we keep going forward as well. And then I think sharing with the community, people want to know that their input was actually used and whatever way, whether it's considered or formed this part or whatever, because I think you want that engagement, because otherwise you go, well, why did I waste my time if they didn't even look at my feedback or whatever it was? So I think it is about sharing the results with the community is really important, and how we do that in a really easy to digest or easy to consume kind of way. And I think, again, it's another skill set to talk different languages, essentially, and both literally speak different languages, but then also that metaphorical or just like that translation between tech and community and those kind of people as well, which I find I fall a lot into that space where I'm translating between the two kind of tech people, councils, whoever they are, and trying to understand as best I can both so that we can have that communication flowing back and forth.
That's why I find night seeing the walking is just such a great, you know, first of all, walking and talking is really substantial. I mean, there've been some studies. Yeah, actually, it's more creative, it's more productive, and it's fun. And you kind of lose yourself in the physical movement of it as well. I just think that, and it may sound to the listener that we're talking about a real time suck. It's just too time consuming. Oh my God, we can't do all that outreach. But what I've understood from some people is that if you don't do it, the community engagement correctly, then you may have to do it over, because there is this thing called community complaints. And it's kind of like,
and the voice, right? We're using our voices more and more.
We are. And it's like, got to do it over. You know, it's better to get it right in the first place and make sure that people understand the reasoning. And anyway, I'm diverging.
Yeah.
I'm tired and hot.
No, all good. I think that's the perfect way to wrap up this episode. Lenny, it's been so great to have you on the podcast. I really appreciate you sharing these insights and these ideas with us today. And yeah, I really look forward to following along your work and seeing where some of that research and things kind of comes out, and you get your pilot up and running and all those type of things. Because I think it's such an important topic. And yeah, it's opened my mind today. So thank you very much.
I appreciate it. I've learned from you too. I just think this transportation world is just so important. And I'm glad there's someone like you in it and combining all of these disciplines and learnings and staying open. I mean, I think you really symbolize a kind of openness that is super useful, and we need it.
Thank you. Now, I just have one last question, an easy one. How can people connect with you?
Okay. Well, I hope that we'll provide some links and things in the podcast. I am very open to LinkedIn. I just find that the secret to international conversations, which are so important, the nightseeing.net will bring you to the possibility of doing a night walk with your neighbors, in those of you who are improving your neighborhoods. Light Projects is Lenny Schwendinger Light Projects, LSLP. That's easy. And you can see some creative lighting that you might not have imagined. And then LennySchwendinger.com is sort of my speaking career. And if you're looking for training or a public speaker on these subjects we've been talking about and the poetry of light, please do connect.
Amazing. Thank you again for coming onto the podcast. And yeah, I really look forward to our next conversation. We'll talk soon.
Let's do it. Bye-bye.
Are you looking for an engaging speaker, MC, or facilitator for your next big event? Then we've got you covered. Zoe is a go-to speaker, MC, and conversation facilitator with a difference. She's a master at simplifying the complex and making connections you might never see. Book Zoe for your next event. Email hello@mysmart.community or head over to her speaker page, www.mysmart.community/speaking.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community.
You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter at SmartComHQ. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.